Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Hattie Boydell podcast. I have a very, very, very special guest sitting across from me. He is my favorite person in the entire universe, which is a pretty big title because I like a lot of people.
You hear that, Tim and Henry?
Mum and Emma, sorry. And it is my beautiful boyfriend, Mr. Coven Moore.
It's his younger brother, actually. He shaved his beard recently.
Yeah. So my boyfriend normally has a beard, and the other day he shaved his beard, and I call him his younger brother because they look so different.
Just traded in for the newer model.
I actually cried a few months ago when he shaved it off because it was such a different – I just really had to adjust to his face, and it was quite an experience, but
I didn't have facial hair when you met me. I shaved the day you met me, but then for the whole 2.5 years after that, I'd always had a beard.
Well, you made a promise to me that you would have facial hair by the time you took me on a date, which was only a few days later, and he had a little bit of stubble there, so we were onto something. So, you know, I actually noticed how nervous I was to do this podcast with you. Nervous and excited, and also always incredibly grateful. You know, I tell you how much I love you every day and how grateful I am to have you in my life. And people come into our life for different reasons, and I'm always grateful that you came into mine despite, you know, challenges that we face and things that we overcame, and we learned so much more about each other and ourselves. And we really do have a beautiful relationship, one that I'm incredibly proud of. And I have a question for you, and I actually ask everyone who comes on my podcast this question. And Coven actually has no idea about any of the questions that I want to ask him, and we're just going to let it flow. So my first question to you is, how would you describe your relationship with yourself?
Ongoing is how I would describe it. I think I've come a really long way in the last 2 years, and I do have to give you a lot of credit for that. I think when I met you, we had our greatest battles very early, and I think a lot of that was due to the fact that I wasn't ready or hadn't really done any inner work on myself, and so I was really bad at communicating with others, and to be honest, I was really bad at communicating with myself. So when I would feel uncomfortable or hurt or angry, I wouldn't sit in those emotions. I wouldn't ask myself why. And even on the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, when I was really happy and loving what I was doing, I also wouldn't ask myself why. And that's been something that sort of you've showed me how to do over the last 2 years. So I definitely feel like I've come a long way, but I definitely still feel like I have a long way to go. And that was actually something that I was reflecting on this morning. Funnily enough, you probably noticed I was a little bit quiet this morning, but we've had a few conversations recently about, you asked me, what is your greatest fear? And my greatest fear is living one life. You know, I often find myself wondering, what would I be doing differently if I wasn't so heavily invested in bodybuilding in the gym? What other experiences would I be chasing? You know, and sometimes I feel like this fear that I have robs me of being present in what I'm doing right now and everything that I'm succeeding in right now, both relationship, business, hobbies. So I think the next chapter for me is figuring out how to be more present.
That was beautiful. Do you know what kind of triggered, I guess, the thoughts of, I guess, to notice that you haven't been present? Like, what did you notice about yourself? And you're like, oh, is it that you were continuously searching for something else? Or did you find your mind wandering somewhere else? Was it that you felt ungrateful for where you were, or was it more like you noticed that you're just like, oh, what if it was like this or what if I was doing that, or?
I don't know. I think it comes with, I've always, yeah, it's like a double-edged sword. I've always known what I wanted to do. You know, my family and friends could tell you I've been persistent about being in the fitness industry since I was 13, 14 years old. And I've always been committed to just doing that. And that's a blessing to know that. But I don't know, I guess. And a lot of this comes from knowing that what I'm doing also affects things like my life expectancy. Being this large is taxing. Bodybuilding is taxing. Eating this much food is taxing. The drugs are taxing. And I love it. And I've always loved it. And it's been my obsession. But I guess I often find myself wondering, will I regret this? Should I be trying other things?
Mm-hmm. There's a cost. And we talk about this all, the time. There's a cost to everything. And for those of you who don't know how large Copen actually is, he's 6'3" and 128 or 127 kilos. And so he's a big boy. And to get bigger and stronger and do what he wants to do, which is to eventually, correct me if I'm wrong, make it to the Olympia stage, which
would be nice.
You know, is a really, that's the highest level that you could possibly get in bodybuilding. And anybody who goes on that venture to do this knows that there is a cost to it, and it's not just the time that we put in. There's cost to relationships. There's cost to your health, you know, the things that you will have to take to achieve that level of mass and conditioning, and not everyone has what it takes, which is why there's only a small percentage of people that are the best in the world. But you know, Copen has an incredible structure, and you know, it's a really big goal of his. I have another question for you, and it is: how important do you think it is for your progress, both self development, and even the goals that you set, to have people, good people in your circles, and the influence of your environment?
It makes or breaks it. And I can say that from personal experience. When I first moved up to the Gold Coast, I would say I was going through a period where I was unmotivated in regards to business. I had a really good job with Cellucor and Extend, and I loved that. And I loved my boss, Pete, that I worked with.
He's a legend. Shout out to you, Pete.
I lost that job due to COVID, and I kind of let myself go into a slump where really all I did was just partied and just cruised. You know, I wasn't making a whole lot of money. Maybe it was a period that I needed to go through anyway.
I think so.
I definitely noticed the people that I was surrounding myself with made it easy for me to stay that way, and they enabled it. And when I suddenly hit a point where I wanted to change that and I wanted to elevate, I was so surprised by how many of them actually tried to hold me down and cut me at the knees. And that was a real shock to the system. And I actually had to reevaluate everything. And I had to find a whole new group of people to surround myself with. And, you know, I've got a small group now of really kind, really successful people who would literally do anything for me at the drop of a hat. Wouldn't ask why, they just do it. And, you know, since falling in with them and meeting you, the change in partner and the change in friends and relationship, I won't say it's been easy, but it's almost been impossible to fail if I put in the effort. So, yeah, very important.
I do, like, obviously, I moved to the Gold Coast actually for Copen. So when we met...
She asked me if I'd moved to Sydney. I said never.
So Copen and I met 2.5 years ago. And, you know, I probably have to... this sounds awful, but I probably have to thank COVID for the progression, would I say, in our relationship. Or
you moved up here. You didn't move up here. You came up here for a holiday. You were just meant to be here for...
A week.
A week, And then Sydney went into lockdown and your mum said, don't come home because you're just going to be stuck in your house. Queensland hadn't gone into lockdown. So you ended up just renting a place in Burleigh.
Yeah. I spent $1,200 a week.
And never went home. Yeah.
And ended up buying a place. But it's, you know, it's interesting, like coming to the Gold Coast, you know, everyone that I knew previously, everyone was super nice. And, you know, I really did know everyone on such a surface level, like you included. It wasn't till obviously we spent time together that, and you opened up to me that we obviously, you know, got close. And I did notice, like, being on the Gold Coast, how different it is. Just the people are so different from the people that I was used to in Sydney.
I remember when you first met me and you were asking me a lot of questions, just trying to get to know me, trying to get me to open up. And I hadn't been with anyone. Oh, that's a lie. I had been with a partner before who had tried to get me to open up. And I wasn't ready and it just ruined it for us and we walked away. But I think the bottom line there was I wasn't willing to try. I hadn't met someone that I was willing to try and break down those barriers for, but I wasn't really giving you a whole lot. And you turned to me and you said, what the fuck do you and your friends talk about?
Oh, I remember that. Oh my God. I remember it so clearly. I was like, I'm so glad you remember that.
Yes.
Yes. And, when I said that to you, what did you – you obviously went away and thought about that a little bit.
I did, and I still remember it. And I thought, she makes a good point. Because the friends that I have now, we share everything. So – and that's nice to have someone that you trust. Previously, I felt like if I unloaded something close to me, it was going to be used against me.
I remember you naming that to me.
And – now I feel like I don't even think twice before telling my friends, my close friends. You know, something goes wrong, I tell them I have an insecurity. I tell them, you know, I have a problem that I need help with. I tell them. And I just know that they're going to either try and help me fix that problem or become a better version of myself. And if we have a falling out or an argument down the track, it's never going to be thrown back in my face.
Something I want to touch on is – I remember when we first met each other, I talked to you about the repair system. And it's actually something that I talk about the repair system all the time to anyone that ever talks to me about a breakdown of some sort. I'm like, no, we've got a repair system. The repair system is so important. And I learned that from Michelle, who honestly has taught me so much about myself by even just introducing the concepts of neuroscience. And you know, something that you just named that is that with your best friends right now is no matter what, if you guys have a breakdown, it's not going to be used against you later on. You know that you're going to repair it. And my question to you is, what have you learned from learning about the repair system in relationship, whether it's friendship or family and friends or this relationship?
You know, it's funny. It's all like with family and friends, obviously it's been huge. But I even use it with my clients on a smaller level. Mm-hmm. Like if I have a client that says, oh, I went out last night and I had some drinks, I say, that's fine. I don't care if you go out and have drinks, but it's all about the repair system or the recovery system.
Yeah.
So long as you get back on track the next day and get back into your macros and you don't allow it to snowball into 2 or 3 days of shitty eating and complacency, that's fine. So, you know, I've used it in a lot of different ways. And actually, a lot of the things that you've learned from Michelle that you've spoken to me about has actually helped me be a lot more compassionate and empathetic coach and understand why people do things, what they need when they have these breakdowns. You know, it's not a one-size-fits-all. You can't just come down hard on them. Mm. That's just not how people work. So it's definitely been very valuable for me. But in regards to relationships, you know, I think my dad and I had a really big falling out. We actually didn't talk for, I think it was like 3 or 4 years. Mm. So, and he's moved from the West Coast to the East Coast about be like a year and a half, 2 years ago now.
A year and a half ago.
Yeah. And they bought a house down the road from us, and they've made a real effort to repair. And that was actually something that I actually didn't think was ever going to be fixable. But it just goes to show, you know, if you're willing to put in the effort, that anything can be sort of recovered. And now I have the best relationship with him. I talk to him every day, you know, and we're going on holiday together at the end of the year. So, yeah, it's come a long way. But I think what I've learned from you and Michelle, I've been able to apply into a lot of areas in my life. And if you're a coach and you're looking to level up, I actually highly recommend looking at neuropsychology and courses that involve that. And I mean from a legitimate neuropsychologist, not from a life coach or a mindset mentor who's done a 12-week course.
I'm going to touch on the repair system for those of you who either haven't listened to any of my previous podcasts or don't know what I'm talking about. So the repair system is something that I learned from Michelle. And essentially, to put things in a really easy perspective, is let's say when you're a child and something happens between you and your parent, and your parent gets angry at you. And in that time, you're like, oh my God, they're angry at me. And it creates like a separation. It is when the parent comes to nurture the child and say, everything's going to be okay. There's going to be a certain way that a tone that they speak to, a touch. There's going to be a way that a ritual that happens at the end of each breakdown. And it essentially says to the baby and the parent, we're okay. We're okay. It doesn't leave this open loop of a breakdown. And that's actually what's needed to improve and strengthen bonding through, it could be with an animal, it can be with family and friends, a relationship, parenting. And why that's so important is because it's the repair system that makes things stronger. So we're always going to, we have breakdowns with our own, like that, you can apply it to yourself. Like if I have a breakdown with myself, I do something that I said I wouldn't do, or I don't do what I said I would do, I need to then do something that repairs that trust with myself and goes, it's okay, I know you didn't do this, but next time we're going to do it like this. And you make sure that you do it and you build that trust and that repair with ourselves. Same thing in relationships. So, you know, when Coben and I, if we have an argument, there'll be some heat. We'll say things, we'll go away, we'll come back, we'll revisit it. And then at the end, there's touch, there's kiss, you hold my hand, there's a tone that you use with me, often leads to other great things. We've got a very solid system. Don't mind a fight or two after that. No, I'm kidding. But it's like, that's what you always want to create, whether it's with a parent, a friend. There's create a system that you and your friend, partner, family, dog, I say dogs, I've got a dog, do that's bonds and goes, okay, we had an argument. We shared what needed to be shared. And something I said to Cohen when I first met him was like, I don't have to agree with you, but I'd like to understand you. And to understand you, you have to communicate with me. You have to share with me where that came from, why you did it, and then what that meant for you, and then how do we repair that? Because if you don't communicate, you resent the other person or you grow apart from each other. And I think lack of communication in relationships is the biggest breakdown. Like communicating your needs to your partner, it can be really scary sometimes. Communicating your needs to yourself can also be really scary. And sometimes what we think we want is actually not what we want. What we think we need is not what we need. And sometimes we just need someone to hear us and not have to tell us what to do on the other side. And that's like without communicating that with your partner and asking like, what do you need? Do you need someone to listen or do you need an opinion? Like something I always ask you is, can I share something with you? Yes, you can. Can I ask you a question? Yes, you can. Can you help me with this? Can you listen to me? You know, and so actually the way we started.
I used to say to you, do you want a solution or do you just want me to listen?
Mm-hmm. and actually like these little questions are so important because you want to create – like a routine and a ritual and a way of communicating with your partner that both of you have an understanding of what you need from each other. And I'll be honest, like this is the first relationship that I've ever had in my life where I've seen eye to eye with someone.
That's a lie. You're like 5'2".
Shut up. He has to look down in my eyes. I can always get to see his double chin. But, and that's what I like, you know, and I think, you know, when we put people on pedestals, it's actually really unhealthy and it's really dangerous, because when that person doesn't do or align with the expectation that we've, the expectation that we have built on that person, everything crumbles.
Can I touch on that?
Yeah, go for it.
You might even remember it. When we first met, and maybe a little bit into our dating, and you were trying to get to the more to the bottom of like why I struggle to open up and all these things. And I said, I think my problem is that I thought you were so perfect. You were so much further along in your personal development journey. And, you know, fair enough, like you're a bit older than me. You had a very long relationship. You had a lot of things to work on after your breakup that you had 2-3 years to work on. And I felt like lesser a person, and I struggled in the relationship because of it. And ironically, it wasn't until I found out about some personal struggles you had, some baggage you had, some maybe things you'd done that you might be ashamed of, and all these other things that I was like, oh, shit, like you're just a human too. And I realized that even though you are better at the recovery system and better at expressing yourself and better in communicating, you were still just like me, you know, and you still had moments where you could have done things better or you could have communicated better.
Yeah.
And that was where it started to become easier for me. And I'm not saying that in a horrible way where it was like, oh, okay, like you're lesser a person as well. It was kind of just like a, okay, just because it felt like that when I first met you, and I felt so much pressure to quickly come out and quickly communicate. And I felt like I had to do all this progress to, I felt like I was almost doing it to win you over and please you. And that's maybe the wrong reasons for the personal development. Then it switched to, I just started doing it for myself.
Yeah. I love that share. And I do remember, a lot of the moments that you share with me. Like we always walk away from a conversation. Well, I can speak for myself. And I'm like, we would have like a really hard conversation, and I'll just be like, thank you so much for sharing that with me, because I just learned a little bit more about you. And sharing hard experiences or sharing things that we are ashamed of or mistakes that we've made in the past, like I am so far from perfect. I am so far. Someone put Hattie and perfect in the sentence the other day, and I said, that's Hattie and perfect don't go in the same sentence. I'm so far from that. And as you said, like I'm a human just like you, but I think I'm just so determined to be a better person that I'm always curious about why I responded or reacted, was probably a better way, or why I was the way I was in that time in my life. And something that I learned from Michelle is like, we meet people where they're at in their life. And sometimes we meet someone, like when I met you, you were in a really challenging time in your life. I don't want to say challenging, but you know, you weren't motivated, as you named. You were just you were cruising.
I made it challenging, put it that way.
You certainly did. You definitely gave me the challenge I didn't ask for. But, you know.
Everything I could do wrong, I did do wrong.
And you know what? That's just the way it is. Like, sometimes we meet someone and we can be like, that guy's an asshole, that girl's an asshole. And you know what? Maybe they were just going through something really fucking hard and they didn't want to tell us about it. And then you meet them later on, you're like, that person's so nice. And unless it's like something that you religiously are like, you see them over and over again and every experience is like that, it's like, yeah, maybe that person is an asshole.
So but can I
interject
there?
Yeah, go for it.
And he knows this. One of my best friends, his name's Anthony Caligiuros.
We love you, Anthony.
how I met him was, I was working at a gym and I was new at the gym, and this guy had come in, and he's, you know, he's very focused on his, he just went, hey, hey. And one of the girls goes, God, that guy's a fucking asshole. I went, yeah, I can see that. And I had it in my head, this other girl influenced me immediately. I had it in my head that he was an asshole. And I just like painted this picture of him based off her experience with him. They'd had an argument over the fact that he wanted to use the seated induction machine. It was only in the girl's room. And it got to a few weeks and I just thought, oh, that, you know, that's very unlike me. I'm not someone who lets someone else's experiences with someone
dictate opinions
how I feel about them, because I know for a fact that there are people out there who feel a certain way about me because they met me at a certain time or had a certain interaction with me, and that's not who I am. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to go talk to this guy on the gym floor. And I went over and just started chatting with him. And we talked for like 30 minutes, and then we had arranged to go catch up.
Go on a date?
And go on a date. Literally, we went to dinner, him and two other boys. And the rest is history.
Mm.
And now he's my best friend. But I could have just sat in that mindset that this guy's an asshole. I want nothing to do with him.
Mm.
I heard from so-and-so.
You know, I'm just going to give Anthony a massive shout-out because something that we actually always talk about with Anthony is he is so
true to himself.
He's so true to himself, you know. And what I mean by that is, like, he's actually not – he's the sweetest thing in the world, but he's someone that's like, you know what, I know who my people are. I know who I want to spend my time with, and that's the way I want to be versus people that, you know, are people pleasers and just say yes and then go on. Yeah. And it's like, no, this guy is so – has so much integrity to himself, and I'm so grateful to witness it and to be a part of that.
Have you found yourself in a situation where you're like, ugh, I really don't want to be here, but it's the polite thing to do? Anthony's never found himself in that situation.
You know,
and we love him for it.
And you know that, like, so Anthony, we're talking about, he's one of my best friends. I've actually known him for about 10 years. And
that was actually how we met.
That's how we met. We actually met at Anthony. His house. And it's funny, like, I remember opening the door and Anthony's a big unit. Like, I remember my mum being like, I saw your really big friend at the gym. He's so big. Anyway, I remember walking in and I got this big hug from him, and I remember turning and I saw Coben, and I would never forget this moment. Like, he had this, as you can see now, this big, beautiful smile with the most beautiful lips that he's you see a little bit of the top of his gum when he does the big, big smile. And I remember him just like golfing me in his arms and giving me this big hug and kiss. And I remember just looking at him going, fuck, you look so much younger in person than, so we've got a 7-year age difference. I remember saying to him, I think you're a bit too young for me. And he said, oh, my ex-girlfriend was older than you. And I thought, shit, don't say that to me. Fuck. I'm trying to get you away. But unfortunately I couldn't. So unfortunately or fortunately, shall we say. And here we are. So it's very, very fun, very playful. I want to kind of circle back actually to the first question that I asked you, which is around how would you describe your relationship with yourself? And you said ongoing. Do you have an idea of the things that you feel you need to learn, or the skills or the qualities that you feel like you need to exercise more to allow you to be the person that you visualize yourself to be?
I think self-awareness. Mm-hmm. It's a big one. So figuring out why I feel the way I do when I do.
Mm-hmm.
So something I've noticed lately when I'm feeling, I guess, flat or unmotivated or any of those similar emotions is that it comes after a period of not honoring my, I guess, daily goals to reach my bigger goal. So if I go too many days not tracking or too many days skipping, whatever it is, I notice that's when it starts to creep in.
Mm.
Whereas when I'm doing everything right, I feel more
aligned.
Yeah. And it's funny, I'm torn between like, writing, we have this exercise where you say, write out your perfect day. And I know that my current day is not my perfect day.
Yeah.
But I also know that there's a sacrifice that I'm making for competing. Mm. So, you know, my perfect day would be getting up at 5 a.m. with you and doing sunrise and all these things. But when I work late at night, it's like, well, 8 hours sleep is 8+ hours sleep is the priority for bodybuilding. Like, if I get up like I used to at 5 a.m., I'm getting sort of 4 or 5 hours sleep. So probably an exercise I have to redo sometime soon.
I'm going to have to redo it with you. Try and
become more aligned. But I definitely notice, yeah, there's – I guess sometimes there's things that I need to do that aren't necessarily things that would be in my perfect day. Jamming food in my mouth all through the day, having that extra smoothie right before bed to get the last 1,500 calories in. You know, that's all stuff that's not in my perfect day, but it's got to be done for what I'm trying to achieve.
What are you trying to achieve?
Are you talking about the bodybuilding goal?
Whatever you want to share.
I've made a commitment in the last year that I'm going to try and honor that goal to take it as far as I can. So, you know, being completely real, when I was a bit younger, I had a period where I was very committed. And then after I did my first show when I was 22, it's safe to say I had a long period where I just coasted. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got fairly good genetics. I can admit that. I'm someone who can afford to eat Uber Eats 5 or 6 times a day and still stay relatively lean and grow, you know, like there's
so lucky.
There are weeks where I would do nothing right. And then I would check in with Jake and he'd be like, kilo of muscle up and a kilo of fat down. I don't know how you did it. You didn't follow the plan all week.
And Jake is like a fucking, he's like a magician, like so onto everything, like so data focused.
This is absolutely nothing to do with COVID. Jake. You know, the last 12 months since I committed to my previous prep and competed, did quite well, didn't win the overall at the national show. I was like, okay, I've never done a proper off season where I've checked in, I've tracked my training, I've committed to a program, and so I'm going to do that. And it's been very successful so far, but I think I've definitely made a commitment where I said, this is something I've wanted to do for over a decade. The passion hasn't gone away. The goal hasn't gone away. So I'm kind of doing a disservice to myself by half-assing it just because – and this is the thing about, like, sometimes good genetics can be a curse.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get away with so much, you know? Like, I know people who just don't have the – genetics of the body, they do everything right and they have to. Whereas, you know, sometimes when you can get away with things, you allow yourself to be a little more flexible. And I think that's what I'm trying to avoid this year. And I know that I don't have, people will say otherwise, and that's really lovely. I'm very self-aware. I'm not going to be a Mr. Olympia. You know, guys like Chris, they're flawless, you know, structurally. They don't have imbalances. They don't have, you know, like that's the top 0.0001%. But I would like to try and get to the Olympia stage. And I do think that that's something I could do if I applied myself. You know, just seeing in the last 12 months, well, it's been 9 months in my off season and I've gained 10 kilos of lean tissue. And we haven't really had to do anything too crazy. So, yeah, I definitely think it's plausible. And that is a goal.
I do agree with you. Like, you know, obviously I get to live next, like I live with you. I see you every day. I observe the hell out of you. And, you know, I see the periods where you coast a little bit and I see the periods where you work really hard. And you are someone that does have great genetics, but you're also a really fucking hard worker. And the times that you apply that hard work to your craft, to your process, you get above average results of what most people who have to just work hard get. And I sit there and I'm like, you know, if he can apply this more and more and more, and even just that, if he can get a little bit better at applying it, like in 5 years' time, where you will be. Like that makes me, and I say it to you all the time, I get so excited about like in 5 years' time, imagine what your physique's going to look like in 5 years' time. But that is if you do the work. And this is to anyone listening. It's like there's so many people that genetically have great genetics, but great genetics and hard work, that's a fucking incredible outcome. And the greatest thing is not just what your physique looks like, but it's what you learn about yourself along the way. It's how you find out how fucking resilient you are, how powerful your mindset is, how great the choices are or the impact of our choices that we make consistently over time.
Yeah. It's funny. Before I met Hattie and someone told me she was natural and I said, yeah, okay. I laughed. But like you said, I live with you and it's been very eye-opening to be exposed to someone who just never misses a beat. Like it's easier to be on track when you live with someone who is always doing everything, the right thing. And I know it's routine and I know it's all this stuff, but I just sometimes I look and I'm just like, I don't know how you do it. Like you wake up the same time every day. You don't miss any of the supplements like magnesium, fish, just all the small things, all your food, everything's always tracked. Everything's always accounted for. You know, you train so much harder than anyone I've ever seen before. And, you know, I'm the example of maybe great genetics and hyper responder to gear and, you know, I work hard, but you're an example of someone who is, I know you say you don't have good genetics, but I'm sorry, you have great genetics and when you just do everything right all the time for a very, very long time. You know, and you're like when people say it's impossible, but like you're the type of person who then if you did introduce the element of gear, you would be competitive on an Olympia wellness stage. Mm. But that's just not something that you want to do personally.
Yeah. A question I get asked all the time is, you know, why WBFF or why wouldn't you do Olympia? And I'm like, I can compete at the highest level. I can be a world champion in WBFF naturally. I can do it all naturally. And I do, I mean, I've said this so many times on my social media. I do, you know, in the beginning when people used to accuse me of steroids, I used to think, oh, thanks for the compliment. But now, because I've just been working at it for so long, I realize it's not actually just about me, but it's what we rob other people who aspire to do what I do, who aspire to get to the level of condition that I do by saying, no, you can't do it naturally. I'm like, you can, but it's taken me 16 fucking years to do it.
It's funny. Because I was scrolling down your Instagram the other day. I actually went quite a long way. I was just like having a little stalk. And I came across some of she used to put up comparisons like she does now. Obviously, the comparisons are freaky now. But this was when she was not as big. And she put up a comparison of, it's like 2015, 2016, 2017.
Mm,
it was 3 years of growth. And the top comment was, you've hardly changed at all. Is this supposed to be impressive?
Oh, I wish you screenshotted that for me.
I wish I did too. I'll find it and I'll send it to you. And I laughed because I thought there isn't a lot of change year to year and that's not an impressive transformation. But because your end result wasn't freaky yet, the comments were like, you know, how's this a transformation?
Yeah.
Like you've hardly changed or maybe – he literally said, oh, maybe your glutes are a tiny bit bigger and you're a little bit leaner in this photo, question mark. And I was like, but then stack up 16 years of transformations and remove all the middle ones and put them side by side and people are like, steroids.
Yeah. Honestly, like I remember a couple of weeks ago I got my DEXA scans and I got the whole 12 years or 10 years out. Mm. And do you know how much muscle I put on in that 10 years? 4.8 kilos. Mm. And you're trying to tell me that I'm on steroids. It's like, no, if I was on steroids, I'd be putting on 10 kilos. Like,
I put that probably, on in 4 months.
He put that on in 4 months. that's the difference. But if on the physical level, like the way my body looks.
Correct.
Is just so different. And I'm, you know, 5'3". And so, you know, in my photos, I look so much bigger than what I am.
That's muscle maturity. If you look at any of the, even the wellness girls on the Olympia stage, maybe one of them's Issa, is under 20, like 26 years old. The rest, they're all older ladies with kids.
She's bikini. She's not wellness.
No, what's the young
Brazilian? Oh, the young one. Yeah, she's a coot. Yeah. Can't remember her name, but I know what you're talking about.
She's younger. But all the other ones, are, it's time. You know, the all the competitive girls in figure and fitness in WBFF, they're all older. It's must, like when you look at the young guys on stage in bodybuilding who are on gear against the old guys on stage in bodybuilding, it's the difference is muscle maturity. They're like the older guys look like concrete.
Yeah.
They're grainy, they're hard, they're full. The younger guys might be as big, but they just have this soft look about them.
You know, and that's the thing, like I try and look at the pros of like getting older, and that is we get a little bit wiser. We learn about ourselves a little bit more, which makes life a lot more, our life experience a lot better, hopefully. But that beautiful thing, muscle maturity, is something that we have to earn. And I love earning things. I love having to work for things. And it is what, like for the ladies or guys listening, it's like you're never going to stop working on yourself. Well, you shouldn't. Like something that we asked in the beginning was, how would you describe your relationship with yourself? Ongoing. How would you describe your physical appearance? Well, it's going to be ongoing as well. Like if you like building the dream body, it doesn't just stop when you're 30. Actually, my best physique is when I'm 34 years old. It's not when I was 24. Well, not when I'm 20. Like I look back at my photos and I'm like, oh my God, like I was nowhere. I was in this transitional period still figuring myself out on a physical level and a mental level. Whereas now it's like,
I was looking at the photos of you and you're like 26, 27, my age.
That's like, well, 26 is like, when I won the world champions.
Like, you look so young.
I won the world championships when I was 26. You know?
Which is funny in itself because your physique compared to when you were 26, it just shits on it. But that's, there's been such an evolution of bodybuilding. Like to even look at, like if you're coming into bodybuilding now, you've got to go up against guys like Chris, yourself. Like if you rewind it 10 years, like your 2016 physique, which is half of what you are now, that was winning a world title.
Everyone was like, that's so impressive.
If you look at the first classic physique, Mr. Olympia, when guys like Sadiq were coming third, like that was a brilliant physique, yes, but like a lot of amateur guys could compete against that physique now.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty crazy.
It's really crazy. And that's like, you know, we should look at that as exciting because something that I always say is like, don't compare yourself to someone else. Be motivated by them. Be motivated at what is humanly possible if you put in the work. You know, we always say that the recipe of success is consistency times effort times 10 years, you know. And so if you're starting on this journey, don't think, oh, my God, in 10 years' time, because 10 years goes really quick. Ask yourself, what can I do now in this present moment? What am I going to do today that's going to serve my future self? As I walk through this door, as I go through this comfort, as I sit in my why, how, what, and when, like get to know yourself on such a deep level so you know what can motivate you, know what drives you, what excites you, what like turns you on in so many different ways, and then use that to take yourself forward and know that in 10 years' time, if you did all this work from now, like your best body is in 10 years. Rather than people getting worried, as I get older, it's going to, it's like, no, no, you can actually reverse aging from looking after yourself now by building this really strong and able body. But under that is building a really strong and able mind that allows you to be responsive over reactive. You know, it allows us to be more open-minded and caring and nurturing and, like I said, motivated by others rather than being comparing ourselves to others. And I've got a question for you. Yes. And it's around the lessons that you've learned being an athlete. What lessons have you learned from being an athlete or a bodybuilder?
Yeah, I was going to say, there are a lot of people that argue being a bodybuilder isn't an athlete. But, I mean, I did play rugby before I got into bodybuilding, but I always knew I didn't want to play rugby professionally. And once I found an interest in bodybuilding, I knew that it wasn't worth the risk of injury to continue rugby. But what lessons have I learned? I mean, I guess patience is a big one. I think I thought everything would happen a lot quicker than it did.
Can you elaborate on that? Is there a specific moment that you just went to that was like, I thought everything would happen a lot quicker than it did?
I suppose it's easy. I guess it comes with comparison. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very easy to look at a lot of the guys at the top who are younger and think that things might happen that quickly for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Chris being 20, 28 or 29, Ramon being 27, Urs being 24 or 25 or something.
He looks it.
You know, it's. I think it can breed this culture of everything has to happen now. And I think social media breeds that culture as well. I think being in the trenches has taught patience where perhaps previously I felt like everything needed to happen overnight, you know. When I initially had this vision for bodybuilding, I would lose sleep at night because I was so excited. I wanted it so bad that I would literally, like, you know, that night before Christmas when the presents are going to be under the tree the next morning and you're not sleeping because you're, like, anticipating it.
I have that just for sunsets with you and the sunrises for you in the morning. I'm like, can't wait for tomorrow morning with him.
But, like, that was the attitude I almost had towards it, as if, like, I was going to wake up the next morning and it was all going to happen.
Yeah.
And I suppose, like you said, effort times consistency times 10. It's taught me to be more methodical, patient, put in a plan, trust myself, trust the process.
I want to grab what you just put down there. And it is, I love that you named first, trust myself, before you said trust the process. Because we hear the word trust the process or the words trust the process all the time. I say it, you say it. But there are two types of people that say trust the process. The ones that are actually doing it and the ones that are trying to convince themselves that the process is there when their trust isn't. And I think that's really important to tune into, because you can't trust the process if you're not doing it. You can't trust the process if you're not consistent with it. A process means to do something over time, for one step to the next. There's a sequence to it. But that sequence needs repetition, right? Just like growing. Improving your mindset requires the same amount of repetition as growing your muscle. And I just wanted to grab that, because I just love that you said I have to trust myself first, because you have to. You have to trust yourself and your ability to do what you said you would do. And as you named just a little bit earlier, where you find yourself, I guess, getting agitated with yourself is when you're not doing what you said you would do, when you're not tracking after a few too many days, when you're not.
Jackson Pierce. Friend of ours, he put a post up this morning and the caption was, "A man's only as good as his daily routine."
Yeah.
I liked that.
Yeah, he's very deep at the moment, Mr. Jackson. Yeah,
you put up some good shit, Jackson.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's quite a deep person himself, which is actually really nice to see. I think, you know, sharing is really important and it's always nice to hear. I mean, I fell more in love with you the more you spoke to me. You know, the more you shared with me, even if it was hard, even if it was challenging, if it challenged me, the fact that you shared and I got to know you better made me I loved you, but that's when I fell in love with you. And I remember that moment so clearly.
And I have a better experience of myself when I can share now. So, like, when we first met, I think I said to you, I sometimes hate the person I am, or I hate the person or how I behave. And
you said to me, I don't like who I am right now.
Yeah, yeah. But I didn't know how to get out of that, because I wasn't willing to have a conversation with myself, and I certainly wasn't willing to have a conversation with anyone else. So I kind of just felt like I was stuck in this box. And I think, you know, like you said, the same applies for working on your body as working on your mind. I think there's probably a lot of people in gym culture that use the gym as an outlet, and that can only take you so far.
I agree. I think those that feel stuck are only doing the external things. Those that feel a sense of freedom are the ones that are actually being curious about themselves. And I love the word curious, because curious keeps the prefrontal cortex online. So rather than judging ourselves for what we did or what we thought or what we said or feeling that we feel, And, you know, instead of judging it and then, you know, blaming ourselves or calling ourselves something else on top of that, being curious about, like, why we feel this way? What am I noticing about myself? What am I noticing about the environment that I have? What am I noticing about the people that I'm surrounding myself with, right? Or how I'm showing up for myself? And that allows us to be, you know, explore ourselves, which most people, they only want to focus on the good things about themselves. Like, they move away from hard things rather than, we can only change when we hold a mirror to ourselves.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, actually, interesting, that's a good point. A really easy way to hold a mirror to yourself is to look at the people that you're surrounding yourself with, because you attract the energy you're putting out. So if you're looking at the people in your circle and you're thinking, God, you guys are fucked up, you guys are lazy, God, you've got problems, you know, maybe that's where you're at. Whereas, you know, like I definitely shared a lot of the problems that I had with the people that I was surrounding myself, and I think I did that because it made me feel better about what I was going through, or what I wasn't doing, or what I was doing. Mm. And, you know, then surrounding myself with people who were leveling up and focused and doing all these other things, it was really uncomfortable to begin with, because it really exposed everything that I was doing or wasn't doing.
Mm. You definitely evolved a lot since I first met you. But when I first met you, I really didn't know much about you. So it was like, it really was a blank canvas. You know, it's funny, like when I used to, before I met Coben, I said, I don't want to meet anyone on social media. I don't want to date a bodybuilder. I just wanted to meet someone on the street, really, and then have not know anything about me. Don't know about what I did, my hobbies, my social media. I just wanted to, like, I thought to myself, no, then I know this person's really going to love me. If they love me or they like me, it's because they've just met me and we've just kicked it off and it's like, that's it. And then I end up meeting Coben on social media, a bodybuilder in the fitness industry. It was like everything I said I didn't want. But I used to, I used to watch his stories and he would never speak. And I was like, is this guy dumb? And he's not. He's so far from dumb. He's highly intelligent. And I
just didn't like to share a lot online.
We just didn't like to share. You didn't share. That's why I said to you, what do you and your friends talk about? I was like baffled. You know, I do remember sitting with you in the car and going, if you don't share with me, I'm going. Like, this isn't a relationship. It's an acquaintance. And, I've had to lay a few things down for this one. Nah.
At the start of our relationship, when I'd go over and stay at Hattie's and she would, she has this theory that after sex, you're more vulnerable.
No, I didn't say that. No, someone else shared that with us. And I was like, oh. I just wanted to talk to him.
She would always start asking me questions. Anyway, I wasn't used to sharing and I didn't know how to talk about a lot of the things she was asking me questions about yet. I hadn't experienced any of this. And she would it felt like she was battering me with questions. And I would literally get to the point where I would just go into a freeze. Like, I couldn't talk.
His bottom lip would quiver.
Or anything. And she was like, okay. We can stop talking about this stuff. What do you want to do? And I was like, I just want to go home.
He didn't though. He stayed. I knew how to make him stay. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap this one up. Any final shares, Coben?
No, thank you for finally having me on here.
Finally. There's been so many times where I said, do you want to come on the podcast? Do you want to come on the podcast? And it just never happened. But I think this was, we're going to get people to ask us questions. And I actually got a few of you to ask me questions, but they're all too boring. So yeah, we went on another path.
Very shallow questions, surface level.
Yeah.
Not what your podcast is about.
Yeah. But today was awesome. And I love you. I love loving you. I'm so proud of you. I've learned a lot from you. Thank you for being my biggest fan and my biggest critic. Now that's my mum's job. My mum and Corbin, they get together and they're like, is she wearing underwear? Can you see her boobs? What dress is she wearing?
I'm not controlling in that way. You can do what she wants. No. But when your nipple slips out at media day and every picture has your nipple out it, somebody's got to have your boob covered with some tape,
all right? No, I love you. You know, when you're talking about how excited you used to get around bodybuilding, thinking that tomorrow was going to be the day, when I know that you're going to do sunrise with me the night before, I like cannot sleep because I'm so excited the fact that you're actually going to wake up at 6 a.m. with me and we're going to go to the beach together and we're going to spend the mornings together. And I'm like, and I still am like that. I still, you know, even after this time, when I see you walking towards me, my heart flutters. You cannot wipe the smile off my face. I get so excited every time I'm going to see you. It makes me a little bit emotional. But I love you. And I hope everyone has enjoyed today's podcast. I fucking loved it. And I know I'm going to have him back on again. So thank you to everyone. Hope you all have a phenomenal day. And remember, we have two hands, one for helping ourselves and one for helping others.
The Hattie Boydell podcast is powered by Gut Performance, my daily non-negotiable for a happy and healthy gut. Head to gutperformance.com.au and use the word Hattie for a discount.